I'm Josh Scherer.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
The Commanders have quite a competition going in their defensive line to make the roster right now. One of the guys that is trying to fight his way onto the roster is Jacob Martin. I enjoyed my discussion with him right off the practice field today. He's had a good camp. He will be noticeable in these final couple of preseason games. Had three sacks with the Chicago Bears last year. I caught up with him right after this scrimmage to talk about what was a unique thing that they pulled off today in Ashburn.
I thought it was dope, man. You know, it took me by surprise, you know, so... their ability to put this together and, you know, we'll call it 24 hours, was awesome, you know, to have this game-like experience and to be able to practice in a game mode, per se, against the starting offense is awesome, man. It allows both sides to get better and come out there and compete, you know, talk a little trash and have a good time with it.
So they called it burgundy on gold. You guys were in the white jerseys as the gold team, and you guys kind of got a definitive win, I would say. The first-team offense really struggled against the first-team defense. Will that lead to convos in the building and bragging rights, or how does that go?
I don't know. I haven't walked inside yet. We'll find out. Let's see who's playing, who's on the ox right now, and we'll see what's going on in there.
What has camp been like for you, first year with this organization? Pretty busy roster spot, too, trying to forge, you know, your own resume here and make this team.
It's been awesome. It's been a dope experience, man. Really just with the guys in the D-line room, man. It's you know, top from the top down, man. You got Ryan Kerrigan. You have, you know, you got Tapp in there. You got Sharif Floyd in there, you know. You got Vaughn. You know, you got D.A., D-Payne, Kinlaw, all these great dudes, you know, that have played. You got Eddie in there. Like, you can go on and on and on about the guys that we have in the room, man. And they've made it super easy and cool for a new guy to come in and learn and grow and build that relationship with one another, man. And truly grateful for their experience and the opportunity to be out here with those guys, for sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique situation, to your point, on the coaching staff. Kerrigan is a, you know, Ring of Fame type guy here, and you've got Daryl Tapp, who played here very recently as well. I covered him like 10 years ago. To have that many young, I'm sure he just got out of the league, like, mm-hmm. What does that do to help you guys when those guys were playing and getting sacks and getting pressures just a few years ago?
It's awesome, man. It's a different mindset. It's a different approach, you know, and obviously each of those guys had their specialty, you know, in terms of their pass rush or what their thought process was, you know, but to have the ability to have three sets of eyes, even four sets of eyes, you throw Bond in there, throw D in there, five sets of eyes to ask questions about how are you seeing this, or ask questions about, you know, when LT sets like this, how are you looking at this, or what would you change in terms of your approach if you're getting a guy that's jumping you, or that's arm dragging, or being patient in a set, those kind of questions, you know. So having, you know, three to four guys, five guys you can bounce ideas off of, it takes your game to the next level, man. You know what I mean? Because they've already been there, they've done that, they have the answers to the test, you know.
Jacob Martin is with me here on Grant and Danny. It seems to me, you tell me if you think this is odd, but I'm kind of viewing the way they're putting the D-line together almost like a bullpen in baseball, where everyone's got roles and it's going to be situationally used, like what you're good at. All right, you're on the field now, and vice versa with somebody else. A, do you agree with that? And then B, what's your kind of thought on that? Because traditionally we view it as like four starters, then the next group up, but it just seems like it's kind of this shifting amoeba with you guys.
We have a lot of talented guys that can do a lot of cool things, man. So I really applaud them putting guys in positions to make plays at the things that they're great at, you know. So I applaud their ability to do that, and our ability to go with that and to embody those roles, I think that's super important, you know, to win games.
Which do you feel like maybe is your unique area or calling card in that? How do you feel like you're best to use?
I'm a football player, baby. You know what I mean? Wherever you ask me to be, I'm a B. You know, whether that's in coverage or that's off the edge, you know, if that's stopping the run, whatever the case may be, true Swiss Army knife.
Are you at your best in your mind, like playing the run, getting up field? Like, if you could design how to use yourself, what would that look like?
If I could design how to use myself, it'd be third down every play. But, you know, wherever I'm called to be in the system at that time, or wherever the call is at that time, you know, owning that role and owning that job, for sure.
Jacob, how about non-football before I let you go? What are some of the things you're interested in?
Oh, man. All kinds of stuff. I can go on and on and on. I'd say big for me, I'm big on animal conservation. I'm big on dogs, big on rescues, big on photography, big on skateboarding. You know, whatever's going to get me outside.
Are you a skateboarder?
Yeah, I do. I typically ride around with the skateboard deck in the back of my car. I'm in a rental car right now, so I don't have my truck with me.
So, like, were you in high school the kid that was wearing, like, the skater shoes and the baggy jeans and all that?
No. I've never worn a pair of Osiris's or, like, Etnies right. A day in my life, you know what I mean? But I do rock Vans daily. You know, that's kind of my skate shoe.
You get
choice.
A deal with Vans.
No, I need to.
And then as far as you mentioned, one of the other things you really liked was, you know, your passion with animals. Like, where does that go back, and what kind of work do you do in that way?
Oh, man. My love for animals was my first love, you know. Growing up, I always wanted to be an animal physiologist. And unfortunately, Temple, my university didn't offer that program. So football was the next choice. You know, thankful for all the things that have worked out and the way they have. But animals for me, I would love animals to the day I die. You know, I've partnered with different zoos over the years, whether that be Brookfield Zoo in Chicago.
Have you been to the D.C. Zoo yet?
I have not been to the D.C. Zoo.
That's good.
Yeah, so I'm excited to check that out. Hopefully we can get something going with them.
All right, last one. When you watch, are you shows, movies, binging? Like, what do you do to put your feet up at the end of the night?
Oh, man.
Get some entertainment.
Entertainment at the end of the night. See, none of my shows are on right now. I'm big on Game of Thrones or The House of Dragons. I love Breaking Bad. Heard they're supposed to be coming out with a new show in that same universe, so I'm excited for that. Movies-wise, I don't know. Dude, The Accountant 2 is pretty good. Trying to think what else
action.
I watch. Yeah, I'm a big action guy. Yeah,
I love it. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate you, brother.
Jacob Martin, I knew nothing about him except what his Pro Football Reference page suggests when I walked up to him, and it didn't mention skateboarder. So that was an interesting development. I did not see that coming. Not quite as stunned as I am that Jonathan Jones is a pilot, but Jacob Martin, skateboarder.
Again, what?
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
That never would have occurred to me. Like, you could give me multiple choice with, like, only two things, and the other one was skateboarding, I wouldn't have gotten it. Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We are streaming live on the free Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. You can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network. Brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company, the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit cropmetcalf.com, and you can join their team. It's Bish, EB, and JP. And join us right now on the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude's the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in DMV. It's Coach Brent Pry, head coach of Virginia Tech, entering his fourth season there at Virginia Tech. What's up, Coach?
Coach.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, man. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Before we talk about the season, I just got to get your reaction. And my daughter was there on May 7th at Lane for Metallica. And I know you were there. You got to meet the guys, took pictures. Just kind of give me your reaction to that night. And then was the entire team there as well? Because my daughter knew one song, but she said it was unbelievable. I'm kind of bummed I didn't come down for it, but your thoughts on that? And did the team like it?
Yeah, first of all, I only knew one song.
Really?
But I'm not a heavy metal guy. I think you guys know I'm a Southern rock, but I am a Metallica fan now. Uh-huh. Those guys won me over. The performance, they're masters of their craft. The production was amazing. Being in Lane Stadium, you know, I tell you what was special. Meeting those guys ahead of time and realizing that they understood, you know, just how much this meant to so many Hokie faithful, mm-hmm. was really cool.
Right.
You know, it told me a lot about them. And I think they poured it into the show because of that. I really do. And, yeah, we enjoyed it. First class production, and Lane Stadium, the venue was fantastic, and it was a long time coming, and it was kind of surreal for a lot of folks. But we had some players down in the pit.
Oh, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, we had some players in the pit, not the whole team.
Right.
But we had some guys down there, and they enjoyed it. It was a really big deal around here. It was great for Blacksburg, great for Virginia Tech. And honestly, the Metallica fans were outstanding. They were, their pit rolled, their crew rolled in here about 400 deep for a full week.
Wow.
And the fans were, 3 and 4 days in town, and, it was something pretty cool.
Man, I thought hotel rooms were expensive for a Clemson game. I can't imagine what they were for Metallica.
Yeah. Well, I just stayed at the house.
I didn't get an invite.
Coach, before we dive into this season, tell us what the Commanders are getting from Jalen Lane.
Yeah, let me tell you now, I can't say enough good things about Jalen. He came to us from Middle Tennessee. He had done a great job for Rick Stockstill and that team over there. High recommendations. A couple of our staff members knew his father very well, who is a high school coach down in South Carolina. And so we just, everything pointed to this being a great get for us, and it certainly proved true. He's a tremendous young man, one of our best leaders, and then obviously on the field, he's a guy that has great ball skills, great speed, but has some traits of a running back. When he catches the football, he's pretty dynamic with it. So he's smart. He learns well. I'm sure they're very pleased with what they're getting from Jay.
All right, Coach, let's not beat around the bush. This is a big year. Hokies fans knows this is a big year, especially with all the one-score losses last year and the Rutgers game, which was, I was at, the Syracuse game, what happened at Miami. I mean, just a lot of bad breaks. I don't know what you chalked that up to, but you decided to do something very difficult. You had to get rid of some of your friends who were on your staff, guys that you hired. And you replace your coordinators. Now, one of your coordinators, Tyler Bowen, went to Ohio State, and he's on staff. So I don't know if you necessarily fired him, but you had to fire Coach Marv, and you brought in two new coordinators. Your offensive coordinator, Phil Montgomery, was a former coach at Baylor. He actually worked with RG3, been around college football a long time. And then the new defensive coordinator, I think he's pretty young, early 30s, but he's been an NFL guy the last 4 or 5 years. Talk about the decisions you had to make at letting these guys go, and then how you came about finding the replacements.
Yeah, honestly, it started with some self-evaluation and where do I need to be better? And, and then you start looking at each area, whether it's strength and conditioning, nutrition, defense, offense, and, where weren't we good enough? Where weren't expectations met? And, when you do that, some things are, you feel like you can fix with the personnel in place. And sometimes, a change is necessary. And so in a couple of areas, it was just ready. We needed to reboot. And, whether there's schematic things, cultural things, I love Chris dearly, him and his family, wish him only the best. It was just, we needed to do something a little different. So, the other change we made was in the strength and conditioning area. And, we made a change and hired Jarrett Ferguson, who'd been an assistant here for a couple of years. But, everything that I thought we were lacking out of that department and out of, from our football team in game, I really felt like Jarrett could bring to us. So, but Phil and Sam, I'm super excited about both of them. When you talk about offensively, who gives us the best chance for Kyren Drones to reach his potential and have a great year? Because if he does that, it goes a long way in our team having a really good year.
Right.
And I think had he been healthy all year, that record, potentially looks different. But so Phil's a proven quarterback developer, whether it was at Houston, there was a couple of guys at Tulsa, at Baylor. He's done a great job at that position. He's got a proven scheme. He's got real identity with what he wants to do. And he's been a head coach, which was another plus for me. But and then Sam, his experience is, as you mentioned, he's maybe not the age of a real experienced guy, but his experiences are very valuable. He's a guy that's coordinated at the FCS in smaller levels for several years, and then has the experience in the NFL that you mentioned, but also around some really just quality defensive minds, highly regarded defensive coaches, you know, is where he spent his 4 years. So, you know, it meant a lot. When he was at Wofford as the play caller there, they led the Southern Conference, which I respect greatly, in total defense and run defense 2 years in a row. Mm. He did it 1 year out of a 3-4 and the next year out of a 4-3. Mm. So he's a talented guy that won me over in the interview process, and what a great teacher he can be, teaching techniques and communicating with our coaches and a great person. He and Phil both just, you know, we didn't sacrifice getting the right people that are right for Virginia Tech with any of those three hires.
Coach, I saw that you talked about the competition level so far between your players. How has that raised, and how do you see that transferring into the regular season?
Yeah, this roster is the deepest it's been. We have done a nice job at the high school level in recruiting players that can develop, you know, into good players here and out of the transfer portal. And then we got a good combination, and the team's coming together nicely. We've doubled down on team building. We've doubled down on accountability to the standards and the expectations. But there's more competition at every position. It's really, you know, it's a tough running back room right now. It's a tough linebacker room right now. The receiver room. And there's just the safety position. There's a lot of competition at more positions than we've ever had. And so that drives the practice. You know, it drives the investment level. It drives the sacrifice. All these guys want to play. They want to start, or they want a big role, or they want to make the bus. And to me, competition, it's one of our five fundamentals, because it drives guys to break through ceilings. What they thought was a really good, you know, place they were at, all of a sudden it's not good enough, so they got to do more.
Right.
And you get, you know, and so we have a very competitive environment right now within our program.
Coach, we were kind of talking about the preseason top 25 that the AP put out, and how many different schools, especially in the top 10, have new quarterbacks, whether they're freshmen or transfers or, you know, guys who sat behind starters last year. But Kyron, like you mentioned, had that injury, and he was banged up towards the end of the last year. And then Pop Watson comes in, showed some signs. You played three quarterbacks last year because of the injuries. Were you surprised that both Kyron and William Watson came back because of this transfer portal? Did that surprise you at all?
I wasn't surprised. I felt very fortunate. You know, we worked hard to have that happen.
Right.
You know, Kyron's a proven guy. You know, he's truly a seasoned quarterback at this point. He's got a couple years under his belt of highs and lows. You know, and he's grown as a quarterback. He's been through the rigors of what's required at that position. He's been through a coaching change. And then obviously Pop, you know, you start the year number three, probably feeling like you're not going to play much. And then all of a sudden the team's counting on you to beat the crosstown rival to get bowl eligible. So I'm very pleased with both those guys and where they're at right now. Kyron is healthy. He's getting every rep that a one would get in practice right now. He's really competitive. He's assertive. He's aggressive. And then, you know, Pop is getting better and better. I'm pleased with the camp that he's had. And I really like the services of, you know, the young man we brought in from Oklahoma State. Garrett's done a super job. Hmm. He's had to kind of come from behind and learn the offense. But he had his best day out. We had a 110-play scrimmage 2 days ago, and we saw his best effort to this point.
Is Pop Watson currently the number two, or is the new kid the number two?
Yeah, right now Pop's number two.
Gotcha.
And we do have a competition there. He and Garrett are, you know, I think he feels Garrett kind of slightly behind him and playing pretty good ball himself.
So just kind of looking at your depth chart, I know you've got a bunch of new guys, like you mentioned. You guys were active in the portal. You bring in Donovan Green, receiver from Wake. Defensively, you bring in a kid, Ben Bell. I know you lost some guys in the secondary from last year. Dante Lovett's going to start for you, I believe. DeMatha kid. just talk about the portal in general, and you talk about how deep the roster is. Who should we be looking for week one against South Carolina?
I think you mentioned a couple of guys. You know, you mentioned Ben Bell. Mm-hmm. We need him to be a problem, you know, off the edge. He proved that in his time, you know, previously at other institutions. But he's a guy that's got natural pass rush ability. He's got a great motor, slightly undersized, but, you know, doing a lot of good things right now. I think the other thing that's important to mention is we've brought a couple of guys in on that front that have 4 and 5 years experience. James Donkham, you know, Hickman, you know, he'd been at East Carolina, been at South Florida. Cody Heisman out of North Dakota. These guys are 4th and 5th year players. Arayus Nash out of Mercer. Then you factor in Elijah Fall out of Georgia Southern. I mean, there's some age and experience. Guys that haven't necessarily garnered reps, you know, for the Hokies, mm-hmm. for us, but they've played a lot of ball at some other places. So I like the depth up front. We really helped ourselves there. I think a couple of guys we brought in at linebacker, Michael Short, Antoine Santiago, both those guys are complementing Jaden Keller and Caleb Woodson very nicely right now. And then probably the you know, much like the D-line, we brought in 4 or 5 safeties, older guys that are really impacting our secondary. Christian Ellis, Jordan Bass is at the safety position, Sherrard Koval out of Clemson, Tyson Flowers from Rice, Isaiah Cash. I mean, so we've really bolstered our depth and the competition level at a bunch of places on defense. You mentioned Donovan Green, one of the better receivers in the league when he's healthy. Excited about what he brings. You know, another transfer, Cam Seldon, got great speed, great size, was a running back at Tennessee, returned home to the Commonwealth to play for us. He's an interesting guy. We've got him lined up at slot. And then, you know, a couple guys along the offensive line. Tomas Remack, one of the best returning O linemen in the country, certainly in the ACC. Kyle Altooner, slated to start at center for us as a redshirt freshman. Really excited about what he's doing. So, you know, I love the additions. I think we've helped ourselves. And, you know, we just got to keep developing this group.
Mm-hmm. Season starts in just a couple weeks. Big game on a neutral site. Best of luck to you, Coach Pry.
We'll be all watching.
Thanks, Coach.
Yeah,
appreciate the time.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you guys a ton. 40,000 Hokie alums up in your neck of the woods. So shout out to all of them. Come to Atlanta or make sure you're watching it on TV. Go Hokies.
All right. Thank you,
Coach. All right,
Coach.
Take care, man.
He is right about that, man. I mean, it is a very, very loyal Virginia Tech base around here. Mm. Very loyal.
Do you think Jason's going to still lament not going to Metallica in 20 years?
Yes.
I don't know how many times he said it.
Yes, 100%.
I just watched those videos on YouTube and it looked amazing. I don't know why I didn't just do it.
Well, you knew it would be that way.
You only live once.
You knew it would be that way.
I know. It was midweek. I'd said, you know, I could have taken off the next day, but I decided, don't want to drive down for one night and come back.
Hey, they might come around again in 20 years.
Yeah, right.
No, that was a once-in-a-lifetimer. You missed. You passed on it.
I did.
But I'm rooting for Coach. I'm rooting for Tech. I do have a lot of friends that went there and love the team and support them.
So I hope he's right when he says it's
I like what Virginia Tech is in the mix nationally.
Sure.
I hope he's right when he says it's the deepest roster he's had. Sounds like it is with as old as some of these guys are that he brought in
via the portal. Is his 6th year.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of older.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
Kids, but it comes down to the quarterback. That's what it comes down to. If he gets better because he was just inconsistent and he got hurt towards the end of the year, he's got to get better and stay healthy and they could have a good year. But South Carolina is a big one to open it up.
It's the way it works. 800-636-1067 is the number if you want to chime in. We're the Junkies coming right back.
B Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan, live Ashburn, Virginia, as Commanders training camp is wrapped up for the day. We're really excited to get to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude makes the best heating and air conditioning equipment in the DMV, and talk to Mike Sando from The Athletic. You can read all of Mike's work at theathletic.com. You can follow Mike at SandoNFL. Mike, thanks for joining us, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. We got fun stuff to discuss for Commander fans here.
Well, dude, what's funny is you do this thing every training camp where you talk to coaches and general managers, folks all over the NFL, and you put all of the quarterbacks in the NFL into different tiers. You've been doing this for a number of years. I am curious, before we get, you have Jaden ranked sixth overall, the top of the second tier. Have you ever, going into a season since you've been doing these tiers, has a Washington quarterback ever been rated this high?
I can say off the top of my head, I can assure you no. I don't have to look through the records. I don't have to go see who it was. Not at all. So this is new. In fact, I've been doing this 12 years. So 2014 was the first year. Was that the year Kirk was drafted, or he was drafted right around there, Kirk Cousins?
He was drafted at 12.
12, yeah. So he was just becoming a starter maybe. But I've been doing it since then, and we never put rookies in it before their rookie season because they haven't played, and some of the teams haven't even studied them if they weren't looking for a quarterback. So I always track, hey, what's the highest that a second-year quarterback has been in quarterback tiers, debuting? And so Justin Herbert had that record in 2021, and then C.J. Stroud broke it last year, and then Jaden Daniels shattered it this year. So, we saw Stroud back off a little bit last year. Herbert sort of plateaued a little bit, but I think one of the big differences, one of the most amazing things for Jaden Daniels is the deep playoff push. That's unusual to make it to a championship game as a rookie quarterback. And then not only did he not have a top 10 defense, I think he kind of had a bottom 10 defense. So that's a huge component. When you look at like a Bo Nix having a good rookie year, he had a top 5 or 10 defense. That changes everything. So there was a lot on Jaden Daniels' plate. First quote in my piece is, what I respect most is it never seems too big for him, right? So very good vital signs all the way across for him.
What would it need for him to jump into that first tier?
Yeah, about a half a season of doing what he did last year. That's really all it is, you want to see the second year because there will be, everyone's got tape on him. There's going to be a much more concerted effort coming into the year with better plans to face him, right? So he'll have to deal with that. I'm sure he'll have some ups and downs. All the quarterbacks do, but, I think that people are optimistic about him being able to do it again.
The quote from Jaden's portion is, you had an NFL head coach said the following: I think he is tremendous. I don't want to want him because I want to see another year. Get me halfway through that second year and I'll have a good feel. The defensive coordinators will have all had their shot. My stance with Jaden is, you hear some people talk about regression or sophomore slump, and I think a lot of that is just kind of the content wheel spinning in the offseason. But I don't see it coming just because Jaden puts the work in constantly and is just so focused. Now, what happens with Terry McLaurin? Like, there are things that could impact him beyond his control. But, I see him continuing to ascend. I just think he's that kind of guy.
I think he is, too. I think he has that. So, I think so much of the things you hope for him were affirmed and kind of proven to be true in the first year. I guess the only thing, he got banged up in the ribs one time, is his style of play, is he going to take some hits and wear down at all? And he was able to come back from that and finish the year strong. So I'm with you on that. I think it's a little unfair to Cliff Kingsbury to hold Kyler Murray's failure to sustain his early promise against him just because, Kyler famously had to have a contract clause saying that he'll study. No one's saying that about Jaden Daniels. He, like you said, he puts the work in. So that really gives him a great chance. That's a huge differentiator at that position in particular. It's such an intense position mentally. It's so demanding that if you're just relying on your talent, you're going to be found out. And so we don't think that Daniels is just relying on his talent, right? He's got a lot of it, but like you said, he works at it, and that's huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Caleb Williams from the area, somebody asked that question, but I'm sure people always want to know. He's at 23. What's holding him back?
So there were big concerns after this year about his ability to process the game quickly. I heard that over and over again. I think one of the coaches said it was kind of alarming. There's a lot of people that looked at their tape this offseason, you know, when their head coaching job opened. A lot of people give a look, hey, you know, is that a place I could land, that sort of a thing, in various roles. So I heard that over and over again. He obviously had the sacks to prove it. He had over 60 sacks during the season. I think a lot of sacks is oftentimes a bad sign. We've seen over the years, you know, a David Carr took a lot of sacks. I just think the quarterback controls a lot of that, even if it's bad coaching, and you can say it was bad coaching in Chicago. An ability to get the ball out is critical at that position, and the top quarterbacks don't take a ton of sacks. I mean, at the extreme, back in the day, like Dan Marino took like 6 sacks out of 600 pass attempts. You know, I mean, that's a guy who really knows what he's seeing and can get it out, and I think that's the biggest concern for Caleb Williams.
How much do you think that Bears offense, Caleb, all of it can get better with Ben Johnson there now?
I think it can get better. I mean, good coaching is, you know, building around and what your quarterback can do, and Caleb Williams has talent. So there's no excuse for the coach. That's not an excuse for him to just have another year like last year. I think they've got to find out what he does well, and if it's too much for him to do certain things, then adjust accordingly. Maybe you aren't going to run the exact Jared Goff offense that you want to run. You have to adapt. So I think that will be the balancing act in this first year. I think it's very interesting, though, that I think Ben Johnson has shown that he's not afraid to make public statements, to hold people accountable. He's talked about Caleb Williams' body language. So what's going to happen during the year if it's not clicking for Caleb Williams? Are we going to see, you know, we saw some stuff with Caleb Williams' opinions coming out through various books or his dad talking. Is there going to be any kind of, agendas there? I think that would be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Talking with Mike Sando from The Athletic here on the Rude Guest Hotline. You can give Mike a follow at Sando, NFL, SANDO. You can read all his work at The Athletic. Of course, right now, like, it seems like the whole league kind of talks about your tiers story every summer. So in that top tier, you've got Mahomes and Burrow tied for first, then Josh Allen, then Lamar, then Stafford. What of that top tier was most surprising to you, if anything?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't have predicted that Stafford would climb into tier one. He'd been tier two 11 straight years. That said, he was on the border. He was close. And, you know, I don't have the same voters every year. So 50 voters, you know, let's just say half of the voting block turns over every year, maybe. I'm just guessing. He got 5 more votes in tier one than he got last year. It was just enough to inch him over. I probably didn't see that coming in the top tier. I think the rest of it's fine. You know, I'd be fine if Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson were unanimous as well, but I think there's a history of guys who rely on their legs like that, you know, being docked just a little bit if they're not quite as good of pure passers. You know, there's always been a belief with some merit in the league that, you know, the legs can dry up and that you've got to be able to win from the pocket as a passer, and that Burrow and Mahomes probably do that as better than the other two guys, but at the same time, you can make a case of Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson could be tougher matchups overall to face. Mm-hmm. So they needed to be overwhelming tier one. They are. I don't have a big problem with how it came out.
Quarterbacks that are drafted in the same class will always be compared to each other. And we look at, you have Bo Nix, you have Drake May and Caleb all down in that third tier. What's the major difference in them and Jaden in your eyes?
Yeah, I think Jaden's ability to win without having a good defense differentiates him from Bo Nix, who was able to win with a really good defense. I think that's one for sure. Then I would say Jaden Daniels, you know, ability to process would separate him from Caleb Williams. I think the game wasn't too big, too fast for him. It looked at times like it was for Caleb. So that would be a couple things. And then, you know, Drake May, I think, had an extremely bad situation with his offense, to whereas I think Jaden Daniels had a more coherent plan for how to use him with some better weaponry that probably gave him a better chance than Drake May to succeed early.
Going down kind of the tiers here, I can't help but notice Aaron Rodgers landed right in the middle, 16th overall in the third tier. I imagine that's as low as Aaron Rodgers has maybe ever been since you've been doing this exercise. What did you see with Rodgers last year, and what are you expecting this year?
Yeah, I saw, you know, a very limited player physically early in the year when he was coming off of the torn Achilles. Probably got a little bit better late, but, you know, he's 41. He's going to a place where he just showed up in June. There's not a bunch of receivers that really are his style in terms of the precise route runners. DK Metcalf's a very emotional player. There's obviously going to be some frustrations when they're not on the same page. Arthur Smith can be, you know, a little bit chippy as an offensive coach, offensive coordinator. So I think there's a lot of reasons to believe there's going to be some inconsistency and up and down play. That being said, I think Rodgers is better than what they've had at the position. They still should have a good defense. I think Mike Tomlin's still a good coach. So, you know, they may have a chance to win a playoff game that they didn't have before. I'm just not ready to say they can go deep, especially in the AFC, until we see, you know, Rodgers sustain excellent play, which he hasn't been able to do recently.
Looking towards – well, let me go through the NFC East. So, Jalen Hurts, Eagles, Super Bowl winning quarterback, who honestly I think has played his two best career games in two Super Bowls, comes in a tie for ninth in – I believe that's the same tier two. Hurts remains, like, polarizing for people. I think he's a heck of a player. I think he's an accurate passer. They go through offensive slumps. But what did you learn when you asked the league about Jalen Hurts?
Yeah, I felt like voters were almost apologizing for having him so low because they like him. But they just don't feel that he is as big a part of their success as Jaden Daniels was in Washington, or Lamar, Josh Allen, Mahomes, Burrow are for their teams. And so that is held a little bit against them. And last year, of course, they took the ball out of his hands. They made it a Saquon Barkley offense. They've had a great offensive line. Look at those receivers. They haven't really shown an ability to put it on his shoulders as a passer the way you've seen Matthew Stafford do, the way I think we saw Lamar do a little bit this last year when his defense wasn't as good. Certainly Mahomes and Burrow, Josh Allen have done that. I think there's a feeling that if you took Hurts out of this good situation, that, you know, he might fall off some, whereas some of those guys that are above him might even benefit from a different situation or would at least still be a star.
I don't know the answer, but I can understand that logic, right?
Yeah.
Because Hurts, when he is good, he's fantastic. But there's enough duds in there that make you wonder, like, all right, if you didn't have Saquon and A.J. Brown and the best O-line in football, what does this all look like? So I can kind of understand that. Of the Tier 2, who do you think is most likely to jump to Tier 1?
I would say Jaden Daniels, and then it may be Justin Herbert, although I don't know if through their style of play they're going to do that. They want to run the ball. So I think it's less likely for Goff. He sort of is what he is. They lose Ben Johnson. C.J. Stroud has a chance, but I think we need to see it. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to do it. I don't think Baker Mayfield. I don't think Dak Prescott. Jordan Love seems like a little bit of a long shot to go that high, so that's probably it.
All right, let's keep going around the NFC East then, because you've got Dak Prescott here, Tier 2, but outside of the top 10, Dak Prescott's 12th. Are people split on him? The injuries kind of continue to be an issue.
They pile up.
Yeah, you're talking about Dak?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think Dak is what he is at this point, and what's held, you know, he was second in MVP voting 2 years ago, so I think he's good, but when you play Dallas, you're not like, oh my gosh, we got Prescott this week. He's going to just blow us up, right? I don't think you feel that, and then you feel the weight of 10 years of having pretty good teams, winning a lot of games, and not being able to make a dent in the playoffs. So I don't think he's going to change the perception of him until we see Dallas in a championship game. They have the longest drought in the NFC, famously, of being in the championship game. So, you know, just another good year, a Pro Bowl year or whatever from Dak Prescott, I think he's going to stay where he's at. he's got to make a dent after the, you know, when the games count.
For sure. All right, then we're continuing, just checking in with the NFC East. I'm not throwing any shade, but the highest Giants quarterback is Tier 4 Russ Wilson, ranked 26th on this list. Clearly, the folks you talk to around the league aren't too high on what Russ is doing at this point.
No, I mean, he's fallen every year for 4 or 5 years. The athleticism that made him so maddening to play and so exhilarating to watch is gone. So he is somebody who can run an offense with some limitations by his height and ability to see. And he's going to need a really good defense, going to need a run game, and isn't going to be a super differentiating talent, right? So you probably drafted a quarterback in the first round, Jackson Dart, Giants, for a reason. It's because you don't think Russell Wilson is the answer. You think he's a placeholder.
What do you think of Dart up there?
Seems like he's somebody who's going to need some time to develop. It's a very difficult atmosphere. I think New York is not for everybody. We've seen that with Sam Darnold. We've seen that with Geno Smith. A number of quarterbacks who've done better elsewhere than they did with Jesse. Even Aaron Rodgers, you know, didn't have a great experience there. Eli Manning kind of weathered it. I mean, he has that Manning pedigree, right? Probably helped him. But I'll sort of believe it when I see it.
I agree with that.
I tend to agree too, man. It's funny, kind of transitioning. We're talking with Mike Sando here from The Athletic. You can give him a follow at Sando NFL. Coming back specific to Washington, there is no question at the quarterback position here with Jaden Daniels. But just, you know, what do you think happens to this offense in year two? You add Debo, but then you have this complication of the Terry McLaurin holdout.
I would sure think Terry McLaurin's going to be there when it comes time to miss paychecks. I would think there's going to be a continuation of what they're able to do last year. I think the Laramie Tunsil addition is you know, obviously good for their offensive line. So I'm not anticipating a big disruption by the situation at receiver. Now, Debo Samuel takes hits like a running back, so his availability to me is always in question.
Yeah. I think the way they use him is a little different than with San Fran, where he'll be used more outside than San Fran, and they used him inside, and that was not smart.
Yeah, he's dynamic on the inside, but, man, if you just put together the tape of him getting tackled, it's like he's getting bent on his back, you know, like a back. It's not healthy long term. I don't know how much of a differentiator he is on the outside.
Mike, one thing I wanted to ask you, did you get to watch Shador the other night, and kind of what did you think?
Yeah, I think so far so good. Nice for him. I think there's less pressure on him being the later pick, and even when he's out there, it's like he's not going to be the starter probably. So I thought it was nice for him, you know, good for him. I think it's more – in preseason to me, it's more telling if you're bad than it is if you're good. I think it's easier to look good in the preseason. I think the coaches can help you look good in the preseason. I think if you look bad, it's a little bit more concerning. So I'm not going to read too much into it, but it sure beats the alternative, and it was a good start for him after a weird offseason.
Totally.
Yo, and last thing, this is the least talked about number one pick
ever
in Cam Ward. And he's a quarterback, and still just nobody talks about him. What do you think of his prospects in Tennessee this fall?
Yeah, I think he's seen as just solid, right? Not amazing, and I think that's a difficult place to go. I don't know what they've got around him for him to have a great rookie season. The coach is under some pressure. There's a new GM, but you're right. That's just a place that's just ignored. And so I think it's a kind of nice to have the number one quarterback there to monitor. I think it's going to be fun to watch him. Maybe it helps him being – it's sort of the opposite of being in New York, isn't it?
Right,
like maybe totally. He just gets a chance to go play and not have it be a referendum on him on every sports talk show every week.
Right. I'm looking at the bottom of your list. The worst quarterback situations: Cleveland, Indy, New Orleans, both the Giants and the Jets.
I tell you about New Orleans every day.
Can you tell me, is there one quarterback situation around the league you think is just the absolute worst?
I think Indy's tough just because of the road they've been on, and to use such a high pick on Anthony Richardson and have it
looked so bad. And then even the preseason game the other night where he didn't see the rusher coming and he got, you know, injured. That's tough. I think that's tough when your whole organization needs a guy to succeed to take him to the top five. And your fallback's Daniel Jones, which, you know, he could be okay, but what are you really going to do?
Yeah. Right. It's not the answer. Eventually, it's not the answer. Hey, Mike, thank you for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
All right, man.
All right, Mike Sando from The Athletic. Check out his latest article, putting all the quarterbacks into tiers. Jaden, the highest a second-year player's ever been. That tells you something.
He's going up the board, baby.
That tells you something. Nobody go anywhere. I want to talk about where Jaden belongs. Some people are upset who he's behind. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley.
B. Mitch and JP here. If you want comfort and convenience wherever life takes you, then you need to turn to Root. With Wi-Fi compatibility, you have full control of your heating and cooling system right from your phone. Forgot to turn down the heat before vacation? You can adjust it in seconds. Plus, you'll get alerts if something's not right. These guys are the best, and they've installed new systems in my house, and I felt the difference instantly.
B, I could go for a Root system in this tent right now. Power cuts out.
I tell you.
Temperature's going up. It's hot as hell in here. Jimbo, save me. You know what Root has done? They've saved me at home, man. They saved me money on my Pepco bills, and my house is just so comfortable, dude, that when you eliminate the humidity, especially these D.C. summers, Leo season, August, when you can control the humidity in August, you can control everything. And that's exactly what Rood's variable speed compressor does. It ensures precise temperature and humidity control, which allows you to operate efficiently even in extreme conditions. You get comfort and performance perfectly balanced. And B, you got to tell them about the tax credits, man. You can get federal tax credits up to $2,000 on heat pumps through 2032. Visit Rood.com/federal incentives to learn more.
Rood, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And remember, if it ain't Rood.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
It ain't right.
Nationals all-star pitcher Mackenzie Gore is with us right now, and he will be with us every Wednesday when he's not starting. When he's starting on a Wednesday, we'll have to move the interview around. But weekly for the remainder of the season, we're fired up about this. We have known and gotten to know Mackenzie well over the last few seasons. He's always enjoyable to catch up with and very candid and has great insights. So, Mackenzie, first of all, thank you for jumping on right after the game from the clubhouse in Kansas City. We appreciate it.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
Absolutely, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, dude.
We're excited to do this for the remainder of the season. What a win for you guys. It was one of those where you get off to the 5-0 start early and then have to play keep away, and then it took the dramatic big hit from Dalen Lyle. What's it like in the clubhouse after a getaway day win like this where you guys battle to the final minute?
Yeah, it's great. You know, getaway day wins they're always the best. But, you know, it was a gutsy win, like you said, big hit by Dalen, and just a really good way to kind of end the road trip and get some momentum going into a series this weekend.
Is travel, and you guys are such pros, you go through the ups and downs, and, you know, we as fans experience everything, but you guys are, part of the reason why you make it to the major leagues is your makeup, where, you know, it's water off a duck's back when things are bad, and, you know, you're even keel when it's good. Is it really more fun to travel after a win like this?
Yeah, I think so. For sure. Winning is a lot more fun than losing, so 100%.
When you get on the plane on a day like today, like, I'm sure there's clicks and everyone kind of does their own thing, but is it cards or music or people just kind of locked into their iPads? Like, what's going on for those of us that have never been on one of those team charter flights? What's that like?
We got a good group here, so there's a lot of, it could be cards, there's always music being played, but we're always kind of chatting, hanging out. So we got a good group. And so the flights are always fun, and kind of whatever had happened in that game before is over with once you get on the airplane. And, but yeah, flights are great. It's, you know, it's one of the things you look forward to when a season starts is you get to kind of hang out on flights again. So,
Mackenzie, how are you feeling just at this stage? Again, I think we underrate it sometimes. It's such a grind what you guys go through. You're showing up in February and getting ready for this long season. It feels like you've been probably doing it on this treadmill for
100 years as you get into the dog days of July and August and, you know, almost to September. Just how's the body feeling? How's everything feeling stuff-wise?
Yeah, I feel good. Once you get this point of the year, you know, it's kind of all about how you feel. And everybody, obviously, you don't feel as good in August as you did at the beginning of the year, but that's kind of everybody. But I feel great. And, I've been taking the ball every 5 days, so. You know, credit to people around me for that. And then, the body's all feels great, and I'm ready to go again Friday.
Nats all-star lefty Mackenzie Gore will be on the bump against the Phillies on Friday at home at Nationals Park, and he has pitched 24 times as a durable, reliable arm. As he said, taking the ball every single time out, coming off one of his more dominant starts of the season, he got back on the good foot. 3 hits, scoreless, 10 strikeouts in San Francisco, 6 innings, walked just one. What went so right for you in that start? And I got to tell you, I loved your comments after the A's game, not just about yourself, but the team in general and kind of the way things were trending as a pitching staff. It was a moment where you really showed up as a leader and said, hey, this isn't good enough. We got to get this right. And then lo and behold, you go out there and you walk the walk. What did you think kind of going into that game about the importance of it and how did it feel coming out of it?
Well, I was in that little stretch where you're not playing well, you go in, try to make adjustments to kind of just get back to where you need to be. Like I said, I meant what I said. That was a tough 4 or 5 days for us. And unfortunately in this game, you're going to have a tough week or so or a couple weeks, no matter who you are. But you got to understand that it doesn't take a whole lot to get back where you need to be. And that's kind of what we had to do. But San Fran is over. So now we're getting ready for Philly, a really good team. We had to get back to doing what we're supposed to do. And we did a nice job of that.
I'm curious, did you hear, Mackenzie, from anybody like players or people in the org that liked the comments and kind of said, hey, I'm glad you did that? Because sometimes it takes a leader or someone stepping up and saying something along the lines of what you did, which is like, this is not acceptable. We're big leaguers. And there aren't that many veterans left in the clubhouse, really, in terms of like guys 30 plus who have won a championships or anything. Did that come up at all? Or did you just feel like someone had to do it? Or was it just naturally what happened?
I think it's just natural. There's a lot of guys with opportunity here. A lot of guys first time in the big leagues. It's just kind of, we all felt it. We still have some guys that have been around for a bit, and we understood that wasn't, no matter what your record is, there's a right way to play the game and a wrong way, and that just wasn't what we should have been doing. And we played much better on this road trip, so credit to those guys, and they've got some opportunity, and they're playing, they're giving it all they got, and so it's been fun to watch those guys.
Yeah, Mackenzie Gore with us here on Grant and Danny. You mentioned Philadelphia having a great season, one of the best records in the National League, first place in the East. Is there a little bit extra for a game like that where you can play spoiler and kind of let your competitive juices go as you are such a huge competitor?
Yeah, they're really good. It's Philly. We play them a lot. And you better be ready to go or they'll beat you. And they can get ugly quick with them. And so you just got to come in ready to go prepared. And there's always a good crowd when we play them. So it'll be a lot of fun. And they're a really good team and you get opportunity to play against the best. So
Mackenzie's thrown against them, the front runners in the division, twice this year, 2 quality starts, including opening day, 6 innings,
unbelievable,
1 hit, 13 strikeouts, maybe the best start of your career. Going back real quick, you mentioned the rut before. I have not gotten a chance to talk to you about this. Was there any possibility, do you think, in that A's game that you were tipping anything? Was that something you guys looked into? When someone like you, as dominant as you are, has an outing like that, it's always the first thing I think about, and maybe it's just a lazy take, but did you look into that or try to figure that out, or did you just move on?
Well, you have to look at it, especially when, it was 3 out of 4. We were getting on some runs, and, we hadn't been doing that all year. And there's a lot of balls over the heart of the plate, and there was no swing and miss. So that's always a box you have to check when you give up runs. We didn't find anything, and there wasn't a crazy adjustment we needed to make other than, a few things mechanically and, try not to throw the ball down the middle as much. But that's always a box you have to check. But that's even when you pitch well, you got to look at that because teams are so good at finding it second or anything now that it's something you got to stay on top of every start.
I was going to say, I just think that's something a lot of times fans don't talk about or think about, rather, is maybe the better way to put it. But I remember talking to a hitter in the big leagues earlier this year about this. And they're like, it's all we do. Like, all we're doing is trying to find a little bit of Adele. And sometimes it's something none of us would notice that a team might pick up on. So it just feels like a bigger part of the game maybe than we acknowledge.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, yeah, and teams that are good at it, that's awesome. You know, they're super prepared going in for whatever they're trying to do. And, you know, you got to respect teams that are really prepared, and that's just part of the preparation these days. These teams have gotten so good at it. And then on the other side, you got to be able to not do that. So,
Mackenzie, we mentioned this at the top. We're pumped to have you on every week. And as a regular guest, you are entitled to pick your walk-up song. So when you join us, everyone's in, unless you're pitching, in which case we'll figure it out. Do you have a song in mind, something that you'd want to hear when it's Mackenzie Gore time?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty bad at picking songs and stuff like this, but I mean, I have a walkout I've had for 4 years now, so I guess we could just use that. Crooked Smile by J. Cole is what it is, but I also, if there's something else y'all want to do, that's fine with me too. So.
All right, very good. Well, we will roll with that for now, and if something comes up, maybe we can ask our audience as well. We'll get some of the listeners who are Nats fans to chime in, but I like it. We're fired up, man. It's going to be cool to have you on the show the rest of the way. Thanks for agreeing to do it.
And appreciate you, buddy.
Can't wait till chatting next week.
Yep, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you then.
Have a good trip, man.
Travels. There's Mackenzie Gore of the Nationals with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich.
Free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
All right, joining me now and back by popular demand, every time Fred is on the show, I get no less than 24 tweets saying, could you do this weekly with him? I can't do it weekly with him because he's so busy. He's got about 35 different jobs. He does the pregame show on Big 100 for the Commanders games. He does the postgame show. He does the pregame with Michael Jenkins. He does, of course, the postgame with our good friend Scott Jackson. He's a big part of the Commanders YouTube and website programming. You can follow him on X at FSmoot21SeanT. And, of course, everybody knows Fred because he was one damn good cornerback for 7 seasons here as a Washington Redskin. So before we get to some of your observations of the team so far this summer, I wanted to start with this. During your career, when you were playing, is there a player that comes to mind, a young player, a draft pick, an undrafted free agent, that when you saw him for the first time during training camp or maybe even the offseason leading up to training camp, you knew you were watching a future star?
Yeah, a couple of times. You got to realize that nothing is more flawed than the draft process.
Right.
The draft process is not looking for people by pure talent. They're looking for reasons why not to draft you. Like, that's the thing about it. So when these guys come in as free agents, they end up London Fletcher, who's going to be a future Hall of Famer. Think about this. I remember the first time with my 2 classmates. I remember watching Antonio Pierce. I remember talking to Antonio Pierce, and that's all I need to do. I'm like, this is one of the smartest football players I think I ever been around, and I watched him move, and I watched him orchestrate a defense. He wasn't getting many reps, but I said, hey, AP gonna be that boy one day. Then we had Ife Oelake. You remember Ife?
Yeah, of course.
Drafted Edom. We ended up getting a lot of playing out of Ife. So sometimes you see these guys, they sink through the cracks because maybe they didn't run the fastest 40 time, or maybe they didn't have the most lift, or maybe they weren't the quickest in the drills. It's something. They're looking for a reason why not instead of a reason why.
Those are interesting answers. You know, when Antonio Pierce got the interim job in Vegas, Cooley said to me on the air, he said, he'll get the full-time job. And I said, why? And he said, because Antonio's one of the smartest players I've ever played with and one of the best communicators I've ever played with. Now, it didn't work out for him, but he did get the job. He did get the opportunity.
Yeah, he did.
with the job. I'm actually surprised. And look, you went with actually a better answer because these were guys that not everybody was expecting, things out of. I'm surprised. I thought the first person you were going to mention would be Sean, that the first time you saw him, you knew that there was greatness.
I've been saying that's low-hanging fruit.
I know. No, like, you're right. You're right.
You're like the one thing. Here go the NFL. You got the 1%. That's the NFL. If you make it to the NFL, you are legitimately part of the 1% athletes when it comes to football in the world. Now it's the 1% of the 1%. There's a couple of guys that just freaks. They're creatures. They're a little bit different than everybody else. Everybody else is great. They're good. Their athletic profile is off the charts. But some of these dudes come with not only the athletic profile that's oddly different. Maybe they're big for their position. Maybe they're like too fast for their position. There's something oddly about these dudes. And then it's all about personality traits, and then it's all about how do they play football? Do they play it with an edge? So you knew Sean was different from day one. Like, we knew Sean was different from watching his Miami tape. Right. It wasn't hard to understand that this dude was going to be different. You know what? I'm going to tell you somebody who I think most people would agree with me was a totally freakish athlete. I think we totally utilized him wrong. But I don't think we got the best out of LeVar Arrington. I think if we was more of a 3-4 front and him rushing off the edge as a true outside edge rushing linebacker instead of forcing him to play in space, I think Hall of Famer, easily. Like, it's just some guys, you get them to teams and they're just not utilized correctly. Yeah. There's no way I would have had a 6'4", 255-pound linebacker that can run with the wind. I'm not having him just play in space. No, I'm not doing it.
Well, I mean, how many times have we all talked about LeVar? Like, I think you and I have talked about him before because my belief, first of all, he was injured a lot, and that hurt him in his career, no doubt. But I've believed this all along, that if Marty stays as the head coach, LeVar Arrington becomes an absolute superstar player playing for Marty Schottenheimer.
Yes, you are correct. Because Marty really had bent us to his will. Marty had us where he wanted us at the end of the year.
Right.
People might remember that alpha start to that year, but we really got the rolling. And you got to realize that was with Tony Banks at quarterback.
Yeah.
So it ain't like we had the most explosive offense, but defensively between Camp LeVar, we still had Bruce Smith rushing the passer. We had some dudes that could go out there and make some plays, and we made some plays on the back end.
Let me tell you something. That season, and I know we've talked about this season before, but you know, it's the 0-5 start, and by the way, LeVar turns it around with the pick six in Carolina against the Panthers.
Carolina. All right? Against Carolina. Yes.
And that starts a 5-game win streak with, as you said, Tony Banks and Kent Graham at quarterback. And the game that I'll never forget was the game in Denver. All right, this is your rookie season. It's cold. It's sleeting out. Tony Banks is over there shivering on the sideline. And Kent Graham comes in, and you guys shock Denver on the road to get to 5-5. That team in that moment looked like a playoff team.
Yes. We really got the rolling. And like you say, it was more, we was not singular. We was more the sum of our parts.
Right.
It wasn't glaring. Now, what we did have was the running game through Stephen Davis.
Yes.
Like, that's what we could lean on. And we could lean on it, like, anytime, any weather, anything. We had that.
Yeah. You know, the game that killed us that particular year was going for 6 in a row at home against the Cowboys. And by the way, we were 9-point favorites, 9 or 10-point favorites at that point, because the Cowboys weren't very good. We lost that game. Do you remember who quarterbacked the Cowboys that day? This is
that was one Quincy Carter who actually kicked off on the sideline.
Yeah, Quincy Carter was the quarterback.
Yes.
Dave Campo was the head coach.
Yes, yes. I remember that game like it was yesterday. We had a real good game on defense. We made some turnovers that we couldn't get past.
Yeah. Yeah, that ended up being the difference, really, in, you know, 8 out of the final 11 with Tony Banks and Kent Graham, and anybody that, you know, knew even a little bit about football was like, well, this thing's heading in the right direction. Marty's about to turn around another franchise like he does all the time, and then Dan wasn't having enough fun. And decided that he'd move on from a guy that would have won double-digit games many times, and you guys would have been in the playoffs for many seasons to come. All right, so you answered that question that I gave you. I want the opposite of that, and I know that this is harder, but was there a player that came in as highly touted, as a young player, high draft pick, maybe a highly paid free agent, that you knew the first time you saw him, he wasn't what the front office thought he was?
Oh, so you want me to be GM and put it on out there?
Yeah.
It's a couple of guys. Let me say this. We have not had a good go when it comes to receivers. Last name Dotson. Maybe we should not draft.
Yeah.
We've tried twice.
Right.
All right.
Just so you know, Josh Doctson, when they picked him, yeah, I thought he was going to be a star. It's the one.
No.
I absolutely was dead wrong, but my son was at TCU. I had watched every game, and I'm like, this dude's big. He's an athlete. He's got hands. But he just didn't love football. That was his problem.
Listen, I kind of watched him practice, and I was like, no problem. I don't think a DB going to have not a problem with him. Like, he poses no threat.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I don't know why he was so highly touted. I don't know. Maybe going against Big 12 defensive backs at that time.
Right.
I don't have a clue. But when I saw him and I saw him run, I saw, I'm like, no, this ain't it right here. This is totally not it.
Yeah.
So it we haven't done good in that department. We might need to stay away from that. Who else did I see? I'm trying to think when I played, when I was like, no, that guy ain't going to work, because, you know, I'm big on college football.
Right.
So I was always watching. I'm going to tell you, people, I ain't gonna say that I knew was a bust. I'm going to say that I was shocked didn't work out. How about we rephrase that?
Okay. All right. Well, that's different, but go ahead.
This is one draft where we picked the right picks, but none of them superly blossom out. And that was the second round where we had three draft picks, I think. That was Malcolm Kelly. Devin Thomas and Fred Davis, right?
Right. Yep.
All right. Here go the thing. If Malcolm Kelly knees actually gave him a chance, he was going to be good. So you got that one right, but you didn't get the help part right.
Right.
Devin Thomas should have been converted to a safety or corner from the first day he practiced.
Right? You were going to move him from wide receiver as a high second round pick. Wide receiver out of what? Michigan State?
State.
Yeah. And you're going to move him to defense.
Yes, I'm going to move him to defense because he had a defensive mentality.
Okay.
He was rough. That's why he was so good on special teams.
Right, he was. Like,
listen to me. Sometimes you just got to know how to – the two positions that get misplaced a lot is wide receiver and corner, because sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the two. And this guy's skill set and mentality laid more to defense. And if they would have played him on defense, he probably would have had a 10-year career starting at defense. I think he would have been that good. All right, so you miss positioning him. And then with Fred Davis, we all know how that went.
Sleepy. He couldn't get up on time.
So, by the way,
would you have been a good receiver?
Yes.
Because you had great ball skills.
Yes, I would have been a great receiver. I got some plays in at Mississippi State, played wide receiver in high school. Only reason I chose, and me and Santana talk about this all the time, I was like, Santana, the only reason I chose cornerback over wide receivers is because I don't want a quarterback to control my destiny.
Right.
So I'm going to control my own destiny. And at wide receiver, I'm one bad college quarterback away from y'all, and I didn't know how good I am.
Right, right. You know, that 2008 draft, I mean, for many years I would reference it as maybe one of the worst NFL drafts of all time. If you look at that draft, 10 players selected, and the only guy that had any sort of career was Chad Reinhart, okay, in terms of the number of games. I mean, Rob Jackson and Chris Horton played a little bit here and there, but you mentioned Malcolm Kelly. They knew he was hurt when they drafted him. So it was a bad draft. But you're saying that Malcolm Kelly and Devin Thomas had some redeeming...
Potential.
Yeah, potential.
Potential.
Yeah.
Okay. Potential most definitely had off the chart potential. Fred Davis, off the chart potential.
He was an athlete.
It wasn't a Fred on the field. It wasn't a Fred on the field. It was a Fred off the field. So it was different. and then you got to also realize. I always tell people this. I don't really believe in bad children. I believe in bad parents. All right, so that's where it starts from. So Everything starts from how the franchise is being raised. Like, we didn't have a franchise that was good enough to nurture Fred at that time and make sure everything was right and have some checks and balances. So it was all about how everything was ran totality-wise.
You said that it wasn't Fred on the field, it was Fred off the field that was the issue. You said that like you're familiar with that description.
No, well, it's no secret. Like, no, I'm just saying, listen to me. When I say Fred was a matchup problem on the field, Fred
I'm
was
talking
a
about you.
Problem.
I'm talking about you.
Oh, if your name's Fred, you probably got both parts of
You got, well, let me just say this. Probably a Minnesota fan has a different view than someone like me, a lifelong Redskin fan, because you were awesome here. All right, well, so that's a good, those are good answers. All right, let's get to this team. Where are you on the Terry standoff right now?
Man, you know, as an ex-player, I think we so numb to it that we don't really, it's not really in our periphery when somebody has business to handle. Like, this business, this the NFL. The NFL contract is all drama. It's all he say, she say, I say this, you say this. I guess I don't pay no attention, so I'm not caught up in the semantics like the fan base is. I'm very numb to it, so I think it'll get fixed. They'll handle it.
So you think it will get resolved? I hear you on not paying attention to it, not wanting to talk about someone else's money, but do you think that they'll get a deal? Look, he's under contract. He's got to play for the team this year, but do you think ultimately he'll get a contract extension before the season starts?
I think ultimately it'll always get done. When does he not? Like, this is that. I guess that's why we as athletes don't pay no attention, because I think people be counting the days down and, oh, we've been doing it for 45 days. It's going to eventually, it always eventually works itself out. It always does. It's just tug of war. Who's going to win a tug of war, but they always end up in the middle. It always do.
Okay, then let me ask you a more, a question that is easier to answer for you. What's he missing right now by not being in camp and practicing?
Well, listen, to be good at football, you got to practice football. Like, this is period. Right. It's a difference between working out and being in true football shape. Like, football has to be like, it's this thing where you just have to do it over and over and over and over again. That's the only way to get in shape. And the only way to do that is to practice. So for me to sit here and say he ain't missing something, but let's understand something about Terry. He's a professor now, so he's going to be in shape. He's going to be in shape good enough to do anything you ask him to do. You don't have to worry about that. It's the callousness. Like, the only way to get callous is to, like I say, have that repetitiveness going through it. All right? Sometimes the timing might be off. All right? You're going to add new plays because you got a new offensive line that's going to anchor it way better than last year. So you're going to run more deeper routes, and you're going to do more things. So, yeah, he's missing a lot not being there, but when – like I say, but when business is in the air, you got to get it handled before you can get on the field. So that's what's going on.
So if he ended up holding out the rest of camp and then reported on that Wednesday before the Giant game, the opener, for the first, you know, full practice before the opener, as a fan, should I be concerned?
No. He's a professional. He will be ready.
Okay.
Like I told you, he will be ready. Right. One thing you don't have to worry about with Terry is he going to be ready? Is he going to be up for the challenge? You don't have to worry about that with Terry. He will be ready.
All right. The player that has stood out the most to you, because you've been watching a lot of these training camp practices, joint practices, preseason game, etc. Give me the player on offense first that has stood out the most to you, you've been most impressed with.
All right, all right. Of course, Merritt has been good. Old Dollar Bill has been good, all right? Mm-hmm. I like what I see with him, and I always tell people, I don't know why people are so caught up in where we're drafted at. That don't mean that's what type quality player is. You find a lot of quality low rounds and free agents. You got to realize we got a guy that has no treads on the tires from last year. You're talking about a guy with spring in his step, can run downhill, can make it happen. I'm very eager to see him run behind that first offensive line. I'm going to tell you this. Ja'Cory Brooks, the wide receiver, has been making plays every chance he gets a chance to make a play. Like, every chance he gets on the field. And, of course, because Terry's not there, he's been getting a lot more chances to get on the field. So I guess if you got one underlying good thing that's happening because he's not there, there's a lot of other guys that get a chance to show that they can go out there and play also. So I would say him, Jalen Lane has been also making plays. So I would say those two wide receivers, and I would say Bill most definitely, they stand out as young, explosive. They got some explosiveness behind them that you don't see sometimes.
Let me just give you one, you know, legitimate stat about seventh-round running backs. In the last 10 years, there's only one running back that's been drafted that has contributed anything meaningful to a team, and that's Isaiah Pacheco in Kansas City. Every other seventh-rounder is either out of the league or has been an insignificant player on teams. So it's a long shot to be a seventh round contributor. I'm listening.
Well, Professor, let me counter.
Okay.
We talked about unique situations, right?
Right.
Then we talk about that. I told you the unique situation of this kid not being able to play his senior year in college, right?
Yep.
Everybody agreed that if he played his senior year in college, that he would not be a seven-round pick. He would have been more of a fourth, fifth-round, third-round pick maybe.
Right.
So the talent was there. The unique situation is there. Most of those seven-rounders didn't have that unique situation. All right, we all know how running backs go when it comes to tread on the tires. All right, most of them that rush for the most yards in college usually don't be great in the NFL. Too much treads off the tires. This guy has a lot of tread on the tires. So I would counter your seven-round statistics and say this.
Yeah.
The Smoothonomics is going to make this, because I like to do people first when it comes to football players, and I think sometimes people take the people prospect out of that.
I know, and I would counter your counter with, I am open to unique situations, but at the end of the day, there are probably a lot of reasons that backs fall to the seventh round. So, bottom line is, I gave you the numbers on seventh rounders over the last 10 years.
All right. Here go one more little tidbit in a unique situation this seventh rounder finds himself in. Not only is he going to the team with a legit dual quarterback, he's going to a team that went to the NFC Championship last year. He's in a backfield that uniquely, he has a true legit chance to play.
Yeah, true.
Brian Robinson, Eckler, this guy has a legit, like, usually seven rounders do not have a chance to play on the playoff team. That's why I'm telling you he has a unique situation that's going to give him a chance at some point this year, going to give him the chance to showcase his talent. And uniquely, he's going to do that behind who I just call the Wild Boys, a.k.a. the Divine Swine, this new offensive line. Let me tell you something. All right, when you speak it out and you tell the truth about this offensive line, mm-hmm. The potential of it, when it it comes to Larry McCarson being an all-pro left tackle, when it comes to Coleman, I'm telling you right now, as good as he did last year at tackle, I think he's going to be a dynamic guard with Pro Bowl potential. Beatis is a Pro Bowler, all right? At right guard, Pro Bowler, all right? And then you got Connelly, who's learning at the right tackle. I'm telling you, this offensive line could be great. It could be great, especially going into the future. So, uniquely, Dollar Bill has a chance.
Give me the player defensively so far this summer that has stood out the most to you.
Trey Amos, listen to me. Trey Amos has this why unique confidence. When I say watching this kid in press coverage brings a tear to my eye, professor, pass me the tissue. All right? This is what I'm going to tell you, because watching this kid with the patience at the line, he understands football. Watching him with the plays through the practices with New England, watching him every day, he hasn't backed down from one challenge. I think uniquely, I think he got a chance to be very good and play a very, very long time in this league. Like, seriously, Will Harris has been all over the place. Like, I've seen him make a play. The one battle that I have uniquely just been watching, him and Zach Ertz have been going blow for blow. And I'm talking about daily, going at it. And it's been a heavyweight bout too. It ain't one of these first rounds. They going round for round, and they going back and forth.
Cast yesterday, there was a lot more with Fred. If you want to listen to it, he's always great. Real quickly, I just put out a text to a couple of agents, and I just asked the question that I brought up yesterday: is it typical for there to be an expiration date on a contract offer? And they both said, yes, it's very typical. And I said, what would it be for Terry at this point? And they said, more likely than not, the start of the regular season or something approaching the regular season where the team says, take it by then, or we're going to pull the offer and we're going to focus on the season once it starts. So it is apparently a typical thing to have an expiration date on a contract. All right, that's it. Actually, I won't be in tomorrow. Denton will be in for me. Chris Russell's next.
Craig Hoffman.
By the way, I don't know why I'm quoting Clinton Yates and sounding like Chris Berman.
The Hoffman Show.
That's a weird bit. We'll get that straightened out.
On the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
That music means one thing. Even on the final edition of the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and tune in YouTube too at the Team 980. Since it is 5 o'clock and technically like our top story is that this is it. This is the final show. You want the not my beat imager, dude?
Yeah, let's do that. I've come to like that as what you've couched as the reason to throw something up when I'm on the show. So that's fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for today's top story with an expert.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
And thus ends my control of this portion of the show. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Clinton Yates.
Well, I would say that I'm not an expert on any particular topic other than Craig Hoffman in this particular case because of how long we go back and, of course, your history in the town. But I just want to say congratulations on a good run, and more largely, I just want to congratulate you, and I'm proud of you for the things that you've done to represent the fans, the journalists, and I would say the interests of this town better than a lot of people who even come here from. You've always taken it seriously. It's always something you've been earnest about without overspieling just for the sake of kowtowing to people that are from here and believe they know everything. So good job on that. It's been a great run and looking forward to your next chapter, sir.
Thank you, man. And that was something that I can genuinely say, and I would say this whether you were on the phone or not, is something that I took from you. Like, I genuinely felt, and like, to be honest, bro, especially after you left.
Yeah.
Like, when you moved to L.A., yep. And it was a couple years later that I wound up getting this show particularly, but especially once you left, mm-hmm. like, because we were so close, and I thought you had an incredibly important voice in the city, what you did on WTOP, what you wrote about in the Post, And even stuff you were doing when you started ESPN, I felt a responsibility to carry that on of like, this is local radio, like your job is to represent the fans. And like in a different way, my job will still be to represent fans, I think, and to make sure that like we're thinking about that stuff, which every professional sports team should do. And I genuinely believe that Monumental already does. And I'm going to add my voice to that collection in the ways that I come to it with my experience. But I look back on the way I did this, like I think about the people that shaped it and on what it meant to be a talk radio host in DC specifically, that was shaped by you more than anybody else.
Well, I really do appreciate that. And I think for those out there listening who are not just listening to us, towel snap each other as real friends. But, you know, when I met Craig came to me. Craig was the radio reporter for the Burgundy and Gold and ended up being a host who got to announce the team being sold at one of the coolest radio parties I've ever seen in the history of the city. So, like, that path alone for young folks out there in the media shows you you can do something if you put your nose to the grindstone and actually want it.
I think the other thing that we should do, I don't know if you have any other skits and bits planned, but the other thing I wanted to do with you was I want people to know that you're also the reason the show happened. And I don't know that I've ever fully told this story on the air, but like when I left the beat in 2019 and took what turned into essentially a sabbatical, where I went to work for the Washington Spirit. I was just burnt out. Covering those Washington teams was exhausting and terrible because the team stunk. Everyone in the building stunk. That soon came out in congressional reports. Well, the team being bad was evident on the scoreboard. But I was burnt out and was just like ready to do something else. And a year later, obviously, the pandemic happens. A bunch of stuff happens to where the job with the Spirit didn't go like any of us. You know, it's nobody's fault. Like, that didn't work out the way we wanted.
Yeah, the league borderline fell apart in a lot of ways.
I mean,
in that
the whole world fell apart. That was a good time back there in 2020.
Yeah.
And thank God for the second time in my career, Chris Kiner, my boss, it was there to be like, answer a call and be like, yeah, I've got something for you. And it started part-time, and, like, I was doing the fitness stuff as well, and I was pretty happy with where I was. And doing, you know, leaning into a lot of the fitness stuff, doing some radio on the side, and they were both kind of split. And then when Travis Thomas left the 9 to noon spot, you happened to be in town, and we got together. And you basically were like, you idiot, you should do this. And it wasn't until you said that I was like, no, you're right. Like, this is something that I have been dreaming about since I started in the media, like having a show that was mine. And it took you being like, hey, dummy, it's right here. Not that I'm 100% going to get it. Like, obviously, it worked out.
No,
I don't know. But,
I
wasn't even going to pursue it until that conversation.
Well, what do they call it? Occam's razor. I mean, the most obvious answer is oftentimes the one that's right in front of you.
Yes.
And I just think that was one of those times when I was glad to be able to be your friend as somebody who also worked in the industry with you. And I told you, you're good at it, which is why you should go back to it. Never mind anything else. And there's no real feeling that can replace, hey, I'm good at this. Hey, this is something I've wanted to do. Even if it doesn't come like in the exact sort of timeline of life that you wanted to be in, the value of having done it when you have skills at it and grow with it and the friendships and relationships you make. I mean, I was just talking to Anthony before the show, you know, before we popped on the segment, and that's a guy who I call a friend now. I wouldn't really know him, obviously, if it weren't for you. And I just think that for people who don't understand how small this media industry is, it really can be very tight-knit. And so sad when one person leaves, it can affect a lot of different people down the line just because of the way everybody kind of keeps themselves together and keeps themselves up and keeps their heads in the game. So, you know, it's going to be weird to not be able to listen to your show. I'm not going to lie. You know what I mean? And I am very, very hopeful, though, that what you're doing next is something that not only is fulfilling to you in the same way, but that other people can see what you bring to the table as much as it did with how you hosted this show for so long. So, dude, man, it's been a hell of a run. And for those of you who don't know, I know the girls he dated before he got married. That's how long.
Great. Now I can always count on you listening and my wife listening. And now I'm thrilled about all that.
That is what I was saving.
That's all you got. That's really all. That's it.
No, that's all I was going to say. What else do you want me to say? I'm not going to blow up your spot, man. You've been a good friend to me, and you've helped me out in spaces when I was down in psychological dumps that I didn't know that I was going to be able to get out of. And those of you who don't know that, Craig is my real friend. There's been a lot of times when one thing in life or another has come my way, and he's talked to me or helped me or straight up told me to get my act together, you know, to get out of the doldrums and to be the person I can be. So I will always pay that forward, no matter how many jokes I got about the early days.
Let's see. Rachel texted me, went, ha, 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 ha. I know who they are, too.
Perfect reply.
That's A plus.
Perfect reply.
No one better Rachel than her. There's a reason that she's the one I married, bro.
On the topic. That's funny. I'm glad she's listening.
Of course. All right, last thing. Yeah. Do you have a favorite?
Yeah.
Like, Anthony, also, like, I would like to do, because you were probably the most frequent guest. It was either, like, in terms of frequency and cadence, you were definitely the most frequent. There's a chance because of the sheer number of basketball games that get played that if we did a total tally, Dave Johnson would have you beat. Because Dave came on every game day. And so, you know, weekends notwithstanding, that's probably like 50 times a season for, I think he did all 3 years, right? So it'd probably be pretty close. Do you have a favorite memory of coming on the show? Because I have many.
I'm trying to think. I remember one where I sang BBL Drizzy.
Yeah.
That was really fun. See, the thing is, though, Craig, and I don't mean to sound flip about this, but like, I don't super remember tons of them because like we talk, and so like the times we talk on the radio are just the times we talk on the radio. The other times we talk are just the times that we talk, so I don't like log them in my head as Craig Hoffman show appearances. It's just, oh, I talked to Gregory today. So what are yours outside of my stupid singing about Canadian rap stars or lack thereof?
That was definitely one of them. You singing Rihanna around the halftime show is definitely one of them. And then I think the other one that's probably like my low key, we had so many walk-offs, and that is a you get the show type of thing that we share from specific things that we like about radio. But there was a time where Clinton joined us from the press box at, I think it was I don't even think it was MLB All-Star. Like, I think it was a college All-Star or a minor league showcase or something. But like, we were doing a video bit, and you were on like in a press box at a baseball stadium somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember you doing like the goggles on your eyes as I was introing you and explaining like Clinton's in a press box somewhere watching actual baseball as he does this hit.
Oh my God. I completely forgot about that.
Here's what that was.
I was in Omaha.
That's right. And the best part is
I was in Omaha and listen, so Mike Farron, who does the morning show on MLB Network, and Jake Mintz from Cespedes BBQ, they're the guys I typically sit with during games. And I had these huge binoculars. Like, other guys in the press box have these, like, little guy pocket deals that they're trying to square away. I'm out here with the full hunting jobbers, and I'll never forget Farron said, are you looking at what the casino players are having on the table in Iowa? Like, why do you need those? So when I decided I was going to do that hit from that particular side of the press box, I was like, I'm bringing the goggles only. I mean, I was like, I'm bringing the binoculars strictly for the bit. They were only hitting batting practice. There was no need for those things at all, but that was a great visual gag. Oh, and also, another moment that I was technically involved in that I was not on the show was when Linnell wanted to challenge your boy, and you hit him with the promo walk-off of my own voice.
That was good.
That was one of the best moments ever.
That was a good one. The thing I was going to say about the binoculars, though, like the thing I like about these moments that we're talking about is they became parts of show lore, because when we go to commercial break, I don't know if like there's a couple different versions of the slate, if you will, to use the TV term. But one of them is you with the binoculars. And so there is a group of people who have watched this show for 2+ years since that happened, who every single commercial break see your dumbass with binoculars in the press box going like this for 3 minutes until we come back on the show.
Listen. There's a reason why I was once television's Clinton Yates.
Yes.
I understand the visual medium and how to get the gags going. That is A1 bit work right there. So I'm glad it gave more that segment in that day.
Indeed. By the way, for those of you that have called in.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
When is it going to feel weird, do you think?
the second I walk into the offices. Like, okay. There is, like, when you've done a lot of reporting over the years. And even when you are, like, walking with people who are, like, important people that, like, clearly you're supposed to be there, right? Like, if I wasn't supposed to be here, this person who is escorting me through this part of the building that I'm typically not let into as a reporter, like, they would be not escorting me. They would be escorting me out, not in. And I'm going to walk in. Right. I'm going to walk in, and I'm going to have a badge, and I'm going to be allowed to walk around and go to meetings. And I think that the team at Monumental and Michael and like
back and all of that.
Yeah, like all those guys have done a great job. I'm very much hoping, and I know they put an effort to set me up for success. But it is definitely going to be weird to be like in many of the rooms that you were specifically not allowed in previously. I'm sure I'll adapt, and I'm beyond excited. And like I'm there to be a part of Monumental basketball and help us win basketball games. Like that's my charge.
This is the last thing I'll thing I'll say for anybody.
But will it be weird? Yeah, it will be weird.
Yeah, no, I get it. But you know what? One of the reasons why Craig and I first got along as friends is because this is something I try to identify in my real life friends a lot is this guy a good teammate on any level? And not only you're a good teammate socially and work-wise, but just in terms of kind of who we were as men, you know, as friends. And I think those are skills and talents that you will be able to take much farther than just this radio station where you've already gone, and even maybe the next thing. But whatever you want to do in this life, Gregory, you got it, buddy. Looking forward to the next step.
I appreciate you. We'll talk soon because you're my real-life friend. I love you. Thank you for all the time on the radio.
Love you, bro.
And off the radio.
Hold on. Clint, before you leave, one last thing.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Clinton Yates, everybody. What do you want around the horn next week? I don't care. Whatever. Anthony, go to work.
All right, Anthony. Don't be a stranger. You got my number. I'll talk to y'all later.
I got you.
Clinton Yates, everybody. Anthony, go to break.
I'm Josh Eyre.
And I'm Nicole Inaiti.
And we're the cooks responsible for all the strange dishes on the internet's most watched daily show, Good Mythical Morning with Rhett and Link, and our own YouTube channel, Mythical Kitchen.
Between the two of us, we've worked almost every weird job the food industry has to offer, and we've developed some pretty strong opinions.
The strongest opinions, Nicole. Opinions so strong they need to be heard on an easily consumable auditory medium.
Does pineapple belong on pizza?
Are boneless wings just poser nuggets?
Is cereal soup?
Follow and listen to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich
free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.